This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, enjoying a conversation with Oliver Morton, the briefings editor of The Economist magazine, talking about the lives of cells, the three phases, the three patterns: autonomous creature, growth cycle, and reproduction. And I'm applying it to two types that I can observe easily in the spring and summertime, waiting for them to come again next spring and summer. The butterfly. Oliver, the butterfly goes through such distinct presentation, the caterpillar stage and then the butterfly stage. Is that something that's unique in nature, to be able to fly after you could only crawl?
There are lots of, it's a technique that a lot of insects use. And it's an interesting example of how a life cycle gives you an opportunity to indulge in some division of labor. And when you think about a butterfly, it's obviously attractive and pretty in various ways, and it's not obviously good at going out and eating, whereas caterpillars are very good at going out and eating. And so if you look at it in a crude but useful energy level, the caterpillar grows from the size of a young caterpillar, which isn't much larger than the embryo that the egg develops into. A young caterpillar then gets bigger and bigger by, as the very hungry caterpillar teaches us, by eating things. And then when it's big enough, it basically changes its body plan completely. And it goes into its cocoon, and cells which have been there since the very beginning, since the first embryo, come into their own and build up a whole different set of organs, including most obviously the wings, with which the butterfly can then go out and find a mate and, reproduce. And so in extreme cases, so not for butterflies, but for mayflies, the adult form, the reproductive form, may not actually be able to eat at all, but it has the energy that the caterpillar, got for it, and it goes out and does its thing. And so you get this extraordinary division of labor between the very brief sexual, period and this long chomping period. And yet, at the cellular level, it's the same. There's only one egg, and that egg develops into an embryo that both has all the organs that a caterpillar will need, but also has these starter kits for the organs that the adult will need, which are these imaginal discs, which is a great term, imaginal discs secreted within its body that eventually, when it forms its cocoon, it will make use of.
One magic detail within the human being, the very complicated collection of cells, is the stem cell. What is the stem cell that we need or could develop in the future needing?
Well, as a human develops from a fertilized egg into a fully autonomous individual, most of the cells in the body become increasingly what biologists call differentiated. So they become cells that are involved with being skin or being nerves or being muscles or being blood cells. And those cells are really, in a sense, dead ends. They're not going to go back to becoming anything else. They're there to do what the body wants.
They're going to age. That's correct.
They're going to age, yes. Stem cells are cells that have not undergone that terminal differentiation and can still produce more or less any other sort of cell. And some of these stem cells are a little bit specialized. So, for instance, stem cells in bone marrow are really capable of producing lots of different types of blood cell. But some stem cells are what the truly what the biologists call pluripotent or even totipotent, that they can reproduce any sort of cell and thus any sort and thus be used in any sort of organ. And the great hope of what's called regenerative medicine is to be able to use such stem cells in order to be able to help people regenerate parts of their body which have failed in one way or another.
In other words, we're looking for something that sustains the cell for longer than it now is sustained in human beings.
It's so, in terms of stem cells, it's being able to replace populations of cells that have, for some reason failed to function properly. It's not, you're not trying to take the existing cells and refurbish them or revive them. You're looking at replacement, but you're looking, and in order to get those new cells, that's where the, that's what the excitement over stem cells is about.
Oliver, we come back to the philosophy of why we live so long after reproduction. The killer whales and us, the orca and the modern Homo sapiens. And I call it philosophical because I did not see any logic to it. Perhaps child rearing, but then again, orca doesn't do a lot of child rearing, I think.
Orcas do a lot of child. I mean, I think it's very interesting that orcas are the others in this group. And now, of course, it's quite possible that the reason that there's no menopause in human in that there's a menopause in humans and a menopause in orcas, it's not necessarily the same reason. But it is true that orcas are very strongly cultural creatures. They live in pods that tend to have defined behaviors. You can see orcas that feed off lots of different sorts of things and use different sorts of techniques. And so learning to be a killer whale may be quite a tricky sort of business, and that might be why it's useful having more generations of older killer whales. This is pretty suppositional stuff. I don't think there's a strong answer on this, but it's certainly quite plausible, and it's a plausible account of how human cultures pass themselves on, is to have more than two generations living together at the same time in the state of nature.
And we continue to extend that timeline. The average age of the populations in my lifetime have expanded strikingly. Can we expect that to continue?
The average age of the American population has. I mean, the global population moves rather differently. But yes, I see no reason. I mean, in terms of the fact that evolution is not particularly interested in people who finish breeding doesn't mean that we don't have to be. And so there are various ways in which, you know, we can intervene in processes that left to nature would lead to our bodies falling apart and dying. So I don't think that that's I don't think that that's an unending potential. Right. I don't think that human bodies can potentially live forever. But I do think that what is currently seen as an advanced age might become much more readily available to people. I would sort of expect that, barring various calamities, people who are below the age of 5 today, or people below the age of 10 today, should be able to see the 22nd century.
Oliver Morton, briefings editor, The Economist magazine. We'll find Methuselah another day. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.